Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mattsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site. And over on the web, we're at mushingradio.com. Make sure you search us over on Facebook and Twitter. You can find all of our updates there, as well as download all of our episodes over on iTunes. Today, we're going to talk about a nonprofit organization here in Alaska called Noble Paws. They offer sled dog rides and instruction for folks with disabilities. They are a relatively new organization up here, and they're just now getting started with some of their programs, and I'm interested in talking to them about all the things that they offer. We're talking to Steve Vick today. He's calling in from Fairbanks, Alaska. Steve, how's it going?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. Can you give us a quick overview of what Noble Paws is and maybe a little bit about yourself, please?
Oh, great. Yeah, I'd love to. So Noble Paws, like you said, we're a nonprofit, and we teach people with disabilities how to run their own dog team. Our ultimate goal, we give rides if someone wants to come for like one day and do a one-day kind of experience dog mushing, but ultimately our goal is to get someone out independently running their own team, regardless of the ability that they have to do that. So we have some special adaptive dog sleds that we have, some we've kind of custom made and some we've purchased and tweaked to try to accommodate most any ability, whether someone has cerebral palsy or Down syndrome, someone who might be in a wheelchair, might be paraplegic, or might have balance issues where they pretty much can't stand on the runners well without falling off due to, you know how it is to stand on runners. So we try to accommodate them with some of our equipment.
So, and what about you, Steve? How did you get involved with this?
I started dog mushing back in 99. I was a handler for a tour operator in Denali, and that got me into dog mushing, and it was that winter, actually, that I came up with the idea for Noble Paws, which was originally an idea to work with people with at-risk youth, and I thought it'd be really great to have at-risk youth learn how to handle dogs and work with dogs and kind of relate the relationship you build with dogs and how you treat dogs is kind of how you build relationships with people. And thought at first that it might be going towards that. And after mushing, I started mushing then, like I said, and I moved to Fairbanks after that and started my own team here and just continued to have the idea for Noble Paws. At that time, it didn't have a name. And it kind of evolved as I learned how to run a nonprofit and raise money and do the paperwork and things like that. That was part of the hurdle, was just the logistics of becoming a nonprofit, let alone running the program and doing the outreach and figuring out how to make this equipment. Because, like I said, when I moved to Fairbanks, I ended up working with people with disabilities here, and that's when the idea of Noble Paws expanded to trying to accommodate people with different abilities. And I thought, wow, this would really be a way to empower people and to enrich their lives in the wintertime when there's really not a lot of outdoor activity available to a lot of people, let alone whether you have a fully abled body. So the idea of expanding that to people with disabilities started kind of coming into the formation of the plan. In around 2004, 2005, I started integrating it. But, yeah, only recently did we incorporate, which was 2 years ago. We incorporated, and we bought some property here in Fairbanks, and we moved in a dog team, and we are set up to run.
Definitely a cool concept. I remember when you guys first started talking about this over on Facebook, and I saw some of the pictures of the carts and the videos that you guys had posted, and we're going to make sure we talk about your guys' website here in just a second. Mm-hmm. But I guess my first question is, as you had mentioned, Steve, that you want to teach these folks how to be able to mush their own dog team. Are your plans mm-hmm. to teach them how to mush a team of dogs of your own, teaching them, you know, the steps and then moving on to possibly their own dogs. You know, just about any dog can pull a sled or a cart or, you know, ski jor,
right.
Whether they have golden retrievers, Siberian huskies, or even just a couple of mutts in the yard. Is that your plan, or you want to keep it pretty much in-house?
Actually, it depends on the person that comes to us and what their goals are. If they they just want a one-day ride just for the experience, we can provide that. But if they want to learn how to handle dogs and run their own team to eventually have their dogs pulling them, then we want to work with them to make that happen. And that might be a, you know, one, training them to run a team and how to use the equipment that would allow them to do that, but also getting them to learn how to train a dog and work with their own dog, and possibly even going to their house if it indeed comes to that, and looking at their plans to make a dog yard. So trying to accommodate them in the best way possible. Our dog yard, we're doing our best. You know, like I said, we're in our first year, so each year we have, you know, a stage plan of growth. Each year we'll add new features. Some of that just depends on funding and participants. But to make our dog yard as compliant to ADA, which is the Americans with Disabilities Act, as possible. So regardless of your ability, you're going to be able to come into a dog yard and safely navigate around and interact with the dogs. So that might be something that we help people figure out, is how to make their dog yard easier for them to navigate around.
You know, Steve, at our business, we do train service dogs for folks with disabilities and a little bit of the mobility service work. And through mm-hmm. the years that we've worked with those folks, they are adamant that they want to be able to be as independent as possible, whether
yeah.
they are
yeah.
You know, working or doing their daily activities. But you'll hear over and over again, they want to be as independent as possible, even if they are in a wheelchair. When folks come to see you, what are they asking you? What are they, you know, do they have some, are they pretty realistic on what they want to do? Or do they say, you know what, I can do just about everything, show me how to do it?
It's the later. I think most of them come here with the idea they want to come here as often as possible so that they can learn how to run their own team. We do offer, like I said, kind of the one-day experience, but none of them have yet come with that idea. They've been like, I want to come as often as possible, and I'm freeing up my schedule to do this. So they come here really energetic and enthusiastic.
Before we start talking about your programs, I am very intrigued about the equipment that you use. Just before airtime, I was looking at the pictures of some of the carts mm-hmm. and sleds that you guys have, and I find those pretty cool looking, especially the black trike that looks like it has the fat tire bikes on it. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we did a lot of research and how to best provide a safe and enjoyable experience for somebody regardless of their ability. And basically what we found was, instead of reinventing the wheel, we went back and we found some equipment that would work, and then we modified it. So some of the things you're looking at, that's a recumbent bike, and a recumbent bike is kind of sitting back and laying back, and you could pedal with your feet. Well, we took off the pedals and we put on footrests so that we could actually set someone in there, and the recumbent bike has three wheels. It's got two in the front and one in the back, and all three wheels are like you said, were the fat tires. And we kind of went back and forth on whether we wanted to replace the tires with skis or possibly keep the tires on them. But the fat tires work really well because they're very wide, and so they have some float. So if you have some fresh snow, a couple inches of powder, you're still floating on top of the snow. You still have maneuverability and breakability of the trike. And so we really thought about how to make that work, and so the fat tires was key. Also on both of the trikes we have, because we have another version which is the same thing, two wheels in the front and one in the back, but you actually lean forward in it. It's kind of hard to explain over the radio, but it's almost like squatting on your knees, and you lean forward, there's a chest plate, and in front of you there's handlebars. That one, boy, we've tried all the equipment here because we want to make sure that we can instruct people on it, and that one's a lot of fun. It's fast. and very stable, and you have a lot of control with that. You have the handlebars and brakes on there, so you have a lot of control on it. But both of those trikes have an electric assist on them so that if you're going up a hill, if you go up a hill with a dog team, and a lot of times you have to kick to help them go up, or you have to run next to the sled. But if you're not able to hop off your sled and do that, then you need to help the dogs go up. If not, they'll balk, right? They'll slow down. They'll be like, oh, you must want to stop. And so we have an electric assist on there, which is basically like a throttle, like a motorcycle. And as you're going up a hill, if you see the dogs are slowing down or about to stop, you can use the throttle to give some momentum. The dog's like, oh, we're still going, and you can make it over a hill without having to be at a complete stop halfway up a hill.
And that's the worst feeling in the world, even if you're an able-bodied musher, for that team to stop on a very tough incline, because you do have to get off and pump and kick and carry on. What about the other more traditional-looking ski-type sled there? What is that thing in the back? Is that where somebody can hang on and push, or what is that, the handlebar in the back?
Oh, you're looking at a sit ski, and a sit ski is basically – it is what they can use going downhill. So if you're in a wheelchair and you want to go downhill skiing, they make this sit ski, which is a bucket seat with straps that straps you in, and your legs are out in front of you, and about a foot or so below you, attached to the seat is a ski. We have actually a bi-ski on it, so there's two skis next to each other for stability, and there's a shock system below that. So, and those are actually made for going downhill skiing. And what we did is we have that, and on the back there is a handlebar, so that and it's made that way on purpose. So if your first time on the ski, then you can have someone behind you who's also on ski, kind of helping you steer and talking to you and getting you used to how it works. And so there's a handlebar for that reason. And then the skis also come with kind of like outriggers, which are two skis kind of on the side, so that if you're take too sharp of a turn, you don't flip over. It kind of holds you up. And there's actually ski poles that go in each hand, and they're actually not poles like a traditional ski pole. On the end of the ski pole are mini skis, if that makes sense, so that you can reach out. If you're turning, you can reach out with your arm, and you have a kind of a short ski with a small ski at the end that you can lean on to help you pivot around a turn or give you some leverage and balance as you go around a turn. And that's
so we're
very,
talking
it's very fast.
We're talking to Steve Vick today here on Mushing Radio and his organization, a nonprofit up here in Alaska called Noble Paws. They're based out of Fairbanks, and they offer mushing instruction and rides for folks with disabilities. Make sure you check them out at noblepawsalaska.org. They also have a Facebook page. We'll make sure that we link to it on our show page as well. Steve, if we can, let's talk a little bit about the dogs. When you hook up a team of dogs for a person that has somewhat experience, they've been through your classes, they know what's happening, and they're pretty comfortable with what they're doing, how many dogs are you hooking up to these rigs or these ski type apparatuses for them to go out on a run?
Right. Yeah. You know, a lot of times the weather and the trail would determine that. But mostly on the smaller things like the trikes that we have or the skis, it's about two dogs. We can go up to four if we wanted to, depending on the dogs that they run. But we try to keep it at two. That's usually enough power. It also depends on the weight of the customer or the participant that's coming.
Right. And you have a team of dogs there. Can you tell us a little bit about those guys? Are they dogs that you've mushed with in the past? Are they rescues, or where did they come from?
We're actually really fortunate. We have a great team of dogs here. We have 16 stud dogs out here, and they're actually Trailbreaker dogs up here. It's from the Trailbreaker kennel, which is Susan Butcher's kennel.
Oh,
and
cool.
When I first got up here and word got out about what we're doing, I was trying to gather a team together that had experience, and I got a few of my own that were great dogs. And Laura Alloway, who's actually running the Iditarod right now in her rookie year, but she's definitely a professional musher, gave us a call, and she works at Trailbreaker, and she had offered us the lease of these sled dogs to use for our program in the winter. And I'll tell you, these dogs, they're dreamy. They're just a really, they're a professional team. So we really lucked out with great leaders and great enthusiastic dogs that have some really good experience on the trail. And that really helps us out when we're on a busier trail, when we're passing other teams and making us more professional by having such high caliber dogs.
And do you guys have, I would imagine you guys have somewhat a set course or a set type of trails that you're going. What are those trail conditions like? Because, you know, I've taken out many a rookie musher, and you think that they can do okay, but as soon as they start getting in those tight turns, it can be pretty challenging pretty quickly.
Yeah. We go to the mushing hall here in Fairbanks, and That's a great place to go because they're wide trails, they're used quite a bit, and the turns aren't that sharp on them. Though if we leave straight from our dog yard here, I'm in Goldstream Valley, they're a bit narrower and tighter turns, so I would only take someone here that I felt comfortable could handle the turns. But when we take out someone on their first run, we go to the wider trails that are available to us. Sometimes we even go to North Pole, go to the Chena Lakes area, and run those trails that are, they're well marked, they're groomed, they're wide, and they provide the safest atmosphere for us to teach these people how to run. Though I hear you, I've found similar things. I have handlers that are novice mushers that I've taken out in our local trails here, right outside of my dog yard, and they're narrow and tight. And I've watched them, let's just say, learn the ropes in different ways. Sometimes with the sled, sometimes without the sled. So it's but certainly not where we take our participants. We take them to the mission hall, and we take them to Chena Lakes area.
You know, there is pretty much of a steep learning curve. A lot of people think, well, you just get on and hang on, but there is some skill involved in mushing, and I was just interested to find out how the folks that don't have all of their abilities do that. Steve, if we can, let's talk a little bit about some of your programs. Looking at your website, you guys offer what you call a mushing school, and then you also have something where you do things with Make-A-Wish. Can you tell us a little bit about both of those?
Right. Well, the mushing school is the one that has become the most popular, and basically the mushing school runs through the season, usually January, February we start. And the goal for that is to get someone to independently run their own team, whether they're doing it on a sled or on one of our trikes, whether they're doing it with one dog or five dogs, right? Now, you had mentioned earlier, you were asking about how many dogs we run teams with. And if we have a person who's on a sled and they're running on we have a starter sled here, we can get them up to four or five dogs on the right trails if it's if their skill allows that. So, but the mushing school can be three lessons. It can be five lessons. Typically I'm finding that most people just want to keep coming back. In some ways we're kind of, we're similar to like, we're like a public kennel for people with disabilities where they can keep coming back here as often as they like, use our dogs and our equipment and our staff to go out as often as they like to go dog mushing. And they basically, it's a small fee to, it's like $10 a visit, $20 a visit for them to come use our entire facility.
Wow.
And keep coming back, and we'll get them as skilled as possible. I liken it to a horse farm where you would go and do riding lessons, and you'd get a lesson, you'd use their horse and use their saddle. Well, we're basically similar to that, but with dogs. And as far as Make-A-Wish goes, you know, we haven't had anyone from Make-A-Wish give us a call, but we are certainly set up to do that. And I know other people here in town, I know Allie Zirkel's done it, and a few other mushers have done Make-A-Wish. You can hear my dogs in the back here.
That's okay.
These are my pet dogs, actually, inside the house with me here. But they haven't really given us a call yet. But the reason we are really trying to get a relationship with them is because we do have the ability here and the equipment here to take someone who might be a paraplegic and have them running their own team. And we could probably teach someone in one day with the right dogs and the right trail to have a small 2-mile loop, 3-mile loop, the experience of running their very own team. And I think that would, it's a great program.
Do you have any other programs that you're working on now or something in the works that may be a little different than those two?
Yeah, we want to do an adventure camp, and this is something that's going to be a long-term project because it's going to involve more equipment. But the ability to go into the backcountry and do an overnight would be is one of our long-term goals. It's a program we're going to call Adventure Camp, and it's going to be similar to mushing school where they learn how to run their own team. And once someone has finished mushing school, they can go to mushing camp, which would then teach them some outdoor survival skills, especially winter skills. And then we would do a guided trip into possibly the White Mountains or just in the backcountry here. There's plenty of trails here that we can take them on an overnight trip. And that would involve taking their own team and bringing their own gear and having that kind of adventure. That's in the works, of course, and we have to have a lot more gear, bigger sleds, more dogs. So that's something that a long-term plan for us is to start that via adventure camp.
So you had mentioned, Steve, that typically it takes 3 to 5 lessons for a person to feel very comfortable with a team. Is somebody always going out with them, either ahead or behind them with another team or, you know, ATV, snow machine, et cetera? Or do you truly let them go out and do it on their own once they feel comfortable?
When they're in our program, we are always guiding them. So there's always someone in front or behind them, or both. And it depends on if they're in a sled, let's say they're going for a ride and they're learning the ropes, their first trip, they'd be in a sled with me, and I'd be explaining everything that's going on with the dogs and teaching them a bit about the gates and the leaders and the different roles of the dogs. And there would be a guide, there'd actually be a handler behind me just in case something came up. Once they graduate to where they're on their own team, then we basically sandwich them. There'll be a lead guide, which is likely me. And then behind me would be the participant with their own team. And then behind them, again, would be a handler behind them. So just in case there was a tangle or something on the trail or there was something went on that we needed to stop the sled, there'd be two of us there to either assist the person, assist the dogs, or both. And, of course, we carry radios with us, too, so we could always communicate.
Such a cool program, Noble Paws, up here in Alaska. They offer sled dog instruction and rides for folks with disabilities. A relatively new nonprofit. They have been in operation for the last couple of years. You guys got to check out their Facebook page and their website, noblepawsalaska.org. Mm-hmm. Lots of cool information there, several videos, and even ways where you can help by sponsoring dogs and offering donations, etc. Steve, what about your clients? Where are they coming from? Are most of them local? Are you reaching out to folks all over the country? Where are they coming from?
Currently, right now, they're all local. Though, long term, I think we can expand our reach to start incorporating anyone. Anyone from the lower 48 can fly up here and use our services. Anchorage, they can come up and set up a whole weekend. So we're pretty much set up for anyone that can come here. We can assist in any way. We have definitely gotten emails from people who want to know if we run tours. And we're a little different than tours. And I have a friend who works in the tourist industry down in Anchorage and is really encouraging us to become a tour operator for people with disabilities, which would fit within our mission and maybe something we gear towards in the future. But right now we're really gearing towards the local population, trying to get the local population to better utilize the local resources we have, which is plenty of dogs and plenty of snow, well, hopefully plenty of snow, and have them really just give them a winter activity and an opportunity to experience Alaska. It's our everyone, regardless of ability, should have an opportunity to participate in our state sport.
Steve, if you can clarify a little bit, you had mentioned that you're different than tours. For folks that are listening, can you describe what the main differences are between the two?
Like I said, our ultimate goal is to provide someone the opportunity to become independent and running their own team, in which case I think we're more geared towards being a school. But we can do tours, but like I said, I'm finding our participants want to learn how to do this on their own. So I think I would liken us more towards a school than a tour. Our mindset is more towards just empowering people to do this independently and have it become part of their life. It's part of a lifestyle up here. And we're finding the ones that are coming to us, it's a love of dogs, it's a love of the sport, and now they can participate in it, and they're really excited. They have wanted to mush. Some of their stories are pretty nice, where they've been wanting to mush their whole life, and you know, we have a participant who was in an accident and thought they would never be able to fulfill that, and you know, now they're starting to come to us. So it's pretty rewarding.
You know, that happened to be my last question, Steve, is you know, so many of us that are involved with mushing, they take that first ride, whether it is a tour or around a kennel with a friend or whatever, and the next thing you know, they're hooked and they're setting up a dog yard and dreaming about the Iditarod. What are folks saying to you? It is a very rewarding and addicting experience. What are the impressions that you get from a lot of your clients?
I think they experience it the same way anyone else would. You can become addicted to dog mushing. And then, you know, you start talking about, well, I've got one dog. I think I need two more. And that means I need more necklines and I need another gang line. And it kind of happens that way. And I think that's, for the most part, is how if you come into the sport and you enjoy it, you want to do it more, you want to do it on your own, you end up with your own team. And like you had mentioned earlier, you know, are we trying to help people run their own team? And, you know, in the end, we may end up doing that more and more and assisting people finding dogs. One of the things we may end up doing, which we've talked about, is actually training dogs and having them for sale or even for lease, possibly for the winter, so that people, you know, if you don't have a trained sled dog, training your pet dog to become one can be difficult.
Right.
But if you start with one that's trained, then it's easier to teach any new dog that comes in. And so we may end up providing a service like that for people also. So it's pretty exciting. And, you know, one of the things also I think that some of them are looking at doing is racing. And could I be a racer and can I race? And so we, this year we were planning it, but we've changed the actual description of the event. But we are hoping to have a dog mushing race for people with disabilities. And we're still going to do that, but we've turned it into an expo. So it's going to be open to anyone with a disability to come, run a team, try a team. It's one day of free dog mushing for anyone with a disability. And we're having that on March 28th at the Mushing Hall. And we're calling it the Golden Heart Sled Dog Expo. And our ultimate goal for that is in the next couple of years, as we have more and more participants, that we'll actually have a Golden Heart Sled Dog race, which will be an official race for people with disabilities to come in and use our dogs and equipment or their own dogs and their own equipment and participate in a race that's open to all abilities.
Good stuff. Steve Vick today here on Mushing Radio, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll make sure that we put links and things to all of your guys' sites over on our show page and pass along that link to you. Steve, anything else you want to mention in closing, anybody you want to thank or talk about before we close?
You know, I think we owe a big thanks to Trailbreaker Kennels for the lease of these wonderful dogs. It really made a difference for us to have, just like I said, if you start with a good team, that makes all the difference. And so it allowed us to be up and running instantly. And I guess the Dana Reeves Foundation, the Reeves Foundation is who we got our grant from, the Christopher and Dana Reeves. Christopher Reeves was Superman, right? And he was paralyzed in accident. And so they have a foundation. They gave us a grant to buy the trikes, the adaptive equipment we have. And that was tens of thousands of dollars. This equipment was expensive to make and add the electric assist and ship up here. So they were really great. And my handlers, I have
awesome.
Half a dozen handlers who come and help us. It's really been good. Everybody here is a volunteer. I'm a volunteer. I have three jobs just to make this happen. But, you know, that's how dog mushers are. You have two jobs to pay for your habits. So, but we're a fully volunteer organization, and so donations help. So if someone visits our Facebook page or our web page and they like what we're doing, it'd be great. They could help us out. Donations go straight to the dogs at this point. So,
well, thank you very much for joining us today, Steve. We're just about out of time. We'll make sure we stay in touch, okay?
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you. Steve Vick from Noble Paws, noblepawsalaska.org. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.